black night past the near-invisible protective dome that lay across Elkathrinan. Caden forced essence into his legs again and ran parallel to the barrier, lungs burning and breath coming in short, sharp gasps, skidding and angling down an alleyway as stone screeched and roared and shattered in his wake. If he were stronger, if he had had more time to prepare, he might have been able to make this trap less obvious. But that wasn't an option now. He was dangerously close to spent. When he finally reached the long public square that ended at the eastern wall, probably a marketplace once, undamaged as yet, and perfectly lit, he slid to a stop, turning and raising an essence shield against another barrage of stone. The shield flickered. Pieces of rubble cut through it, striking Caden in the chest and leg, breaking bone and piercing deep into muscle. He snarled in pain, stumbling back until he was leaning against the waist-high wall that marked the edge of Elkathrinan's dome, then dropping his shield and snatching essence from a nearby illuminating line. He forced the energy into his wounds, flinching as more streaking stone pierced the cloud of grit that blanketed the open space, flying perilously close to his head. The veil of dust eventually cleared to show Alaris at the opposite side of the square, obviously favoring one leg and looking tired, but otherwise no less determined than when they had started. The air was acrid with the smell of shattered masonry. Caden gave a racking cough and wiped sweat mingled with grime from his brow, his hands slick and smeared with gray. The two men's gazes met. There was a pause, a silent acknowledgement. Caden let his shoulders slump even as his pulse quickened.
"It was always going to end this way, Tal," called Alaris, limping forward into the square. "You need to—"
Caden activated the endpoint of his vessel. The outline of a wolf's head, something he'd been compelled to add despite the extra time it took, thanks to the binding all of the Venerate had agreed to millennia earlier, sprang to life beneath Alaris's feet across the breadth of the square, instantly draining every other essence line and plunging the surrounding area into pitch blackness. There was a deep cracking sound, and Caden had only a moment to see Alaris's face illuminated by the wolf's head on the ground, the other man's eyes wide before the ground caved beneath him and the buildings that rose on all three sides smashed inward. Even expecting it as he was, Caden sagged back against the wall as the square exploded with a painful and disorienting roar. Alaris vanished as chunks of stone thundered at terrifying, dizzying speeds toward where he had been standing, as if drawn by some unthinkably powerful vortex. Within moments, a pile of debris, two stories high and just as wide, had formed a tightly packed mound, barely visible within the eerily lit roiling clouds that now surrounded it. An uneasy peace descended. The wolf's head, what was still visible of it, faded as quickly as it had appeared, shrouding the scene in darkness for a few seconds before the illuminating lines of essence sprang back to life, regaining their access to Elkathrinan's deep serrarium. Caden painfully hauled himself up to sit atop the low wall, letting his back rest against the net of essence that prevented anyone from falling over the edge. He knew that if the blizzard were not obscuring the view behind him, he would be able to see the dizzying sheer drop, though not where it ended, more than 3,000 feet below. Like the walls of Fedrus Idri, this cliff, and the others surrounding the peak upon which Elkathrinan was built, was perfectly smooth, glass-like, impenetrable by steel, and impossible to scale. He caught his breath as he gazed at the wreckage in front of him. The con machinery had worked exactly as he'd hoped. But he knew it had been rushed. Crude. Obvious. Some of the smaller stones atop the mound began to trickle down the sides, shattering the silence with their skittering. Caden watched wearily, not moving, as one of the larger boulders began to tremble and then fall away, crashing aside as those beneath it steadily, impossibly, lifted upwards. Flashes of golden essence shone through the cracks, brighter and brighter until the steadily expanding dome of energy pushed aside the final massive chunks of stone, the man in the center of it climbing out of the sinkhole Caden's vessel had created, and then limping toward him.
"Here is what I do not understand,"
said Alaris calmly when he was within hearing range, letting his essence shield drop as the last pieces of rubble slid off it and to the ground with a dull clinking rattle.
Even if the con lines hadn't been thick enough for me to spot them, even if this had worked and I was buried beneath all that stone, forced to sleep for what, a week, two maybe, before I healed? What were you hoping to do? Mount an assault on Ilshan Gathdelteth straight away while I lay there?
He shook his head, moving stiffly but advancing inexorably toward Caden.
It stinks of desperation, Tal. Sloppiness. You are reaching the end of your ideas, and I think you know it.
Caden said nothing to that, the ache of the fight still deep in his bones. From his position atop the wall, he could see the slowly dissipating clouds of dust highlighted by wildly flickering essence, like lightning in the clouds of a fierce storm. Through it all was just destruction. A full quarter of the Builder's last city gone. Sadness settled heavy in his chest at the loss. Alara saw Caden's expression as he limped to a stop, perhaps 20 feet from where Caden was sitting. His voice softened, though it still held accusation.
A pointless demise, he agreed quietly. The oldest, most perfect city in the world, and we have erased it. All of its beauty, its history. I never understood why the Builders did not lay better protections against such destruction. Hell knows they could have.
Aesar once told me that they did it because nothing is truly beautiful unless it can be lost, said Caden idly as he gazed out over the rubble. We forget that sometimes, Alaris.
Alaris suddenly frowned, eyeing Caden as if only just realizing where he was sitting.
Don't be a fool, Tal. We both know that your head needs to be cut off, he said, tone suddenly cautious, stretching out a hand as if to pull him back from the edge by will alone. From this height, without using essence to protect myself? Same thing, Caden assured him.
He smiled wearily at his friend.
So I guess this one is a draw.
Icy wind and driving snow whipped the nape of his neck as he used Khan to dissipate a small section of Alcathranin's dome. The expected threat of essence stretched outward to save him, but he cut that off with Khan too, feeling more than hearing Alaris's cry of frustration as he did so. He rolled backward. Chill hands immediately ripped at his skin. The protection of Alcathranin vanished. The wind roared in his ears, and everything was white. As his stomach lurched, he closed his eyes, forcing himself to push through Khan despite the dizzying sensation of plummeting. The thin net of Khan he cast back up toward Alcathranin revealed nothing for what seemed like an eternity. And finally a figure leaping over the wall and arrowing after him, wreathed in essence. For an odd moment, Caden felt a sense of melancholy at the sight. His friend, trying to save him one last time. Then he twisted, looking for the con mechanism he'd spent several hours hanging on the cliffside to build. Activated the end point. The gate glowed to life directly above Caden's plummeting body, between him and Alaris. A heartbeat later it flashed as Alaris's suddenly flailing form was flying through it. Caden gritted his teeth and reached out again, severing a section of the mechanism. Within the space of 2 seconds, the gate had opened and had been destroyed. The whistling air around him was suddenly strangely peaceful as he fell, his sense of relief overwhelming. Alaris couldn't create a gate himself, and there was no other way to escape from the wells. No way for Alaris to communicate with the others in Ilshan Gathdelteth from there either. He would need to be dealt with eventually, there was no doubt about that. But for now, there was one fewer of the Venerate to worry about. Caden forced himself to focus amid the gale and poured every ounce of essence he had left into his body, strengthening each limb. Alaris had been right. Caden had no idea if this fall would kill him or merely result in catastrophic injury. If there had been time, he might have made a second gate somewhere lower. But there hadn't. Closing his eyes against the biting wind, he braced himself for the impact. This was going to hurt. Chapter 1 Weir stepped through the portal and into a thick tangle of branches and brush, every nerve taut, the old scar across his stomach aching from tension. He forced his way forward as quietly as he could, breaking into a small clearing and exhaling in relief at the emptiness of the surrounding night. The reflected moon in the babbling stream ahead glistened through the thick forest undergrowth, its stark, silvery glow revealing no sign of danger. No waiting ambush. Behind him, he heard Terrace's deep voice curse softly as one of the shadowy, damp-leafed branches Weir had just pushed through snapped back and slapped him across the face. Weir turned just in time to catch a glimpse of his father's old office through the hole in the air, the empty room in the Talandris estate completely dark in order to minimize its visibility from this side. Swaths of foliage quickly covered the view.
"Thank you for that, sir," Terrace growled, as he wiped dew from his cheek, the encroaching gray in his sandy blonde hair catching the moonlight. The scarred man turned, nodding in satisfaction at how well hidden the portal was. Not even the faint glow of essence from the black travel stone on the ground was visible.
"We should have a couple of hours before the essence in those stones runs out and the portal closes. I assume we're alone?"
"Seems so."
Weir oriented himself by the moon, then peered through the forest both eastward and westward. "If layman's put us in the right place, we should be out of sight from both the road and the walls, well away from any patrols."
"It will be the right place," said Terrace confidently.
He gestured to the west.
"I'll gather some kindling while you figure out directions."
Weir made to protest, then let himself feel the bite in the southern night air and relented. They could be here a while, and a fire was a small risk. He hurried off, moving cautiously through untamed forest until he reached the moonlight-dappled road, completely empty in both directions, much to his relief. He fetched four large, smooth stones from the stream that ran alongside it, then placed them carefully in a stack by the roadside. He stepped back and considered his handiwork, nervous despite himself. Were they obvious enough? Too obvious. He forced himself to calm. No one would miss the marker, but it wouldn't mean anything to a patrol. There was probably no need to worry, even if he knew a little apprehension couldn't be avoided right now. If word got out about this meeting, or even of Weir's mere presence here, it could cause... Well, people back in Ilinilan wouldn't be happy about it, that much was certain. He made his way back to Terrace, who was already working on getting a fire started by the time Weir arrived. Weir settled down against a fallen log, feeling the oath stone hanging around his neck as he closed his eyes.
"Driskin," he murmured, picturing the elder from Tol Shen. "When you can do so safely, go to the road directly west of Tol Shen. Follow it and look for a pile of four large stones. As soon as you reach that, cross the stream and head directly into the forest, back toward the toll."
He chewed his lip.
"After a minute or two of walking, you'll reach another smaller stream. You should be able to see our fire from there. Make sure it's actually me before revealing yourself."
When he opened his eyes again, Terrace was watching him. The gifted gave a short nod and immediately returned to building the fire, but Weir couldn't help but note the unease in his motions.
"They should already be out via the auger entrance Ishel told us about," said Weir, choosing to ignore the other man's discomfort. "We won't have long to wait, and Layman shouldn't be far away either."
The king's advisor should know the area well now. He'd spent much of the past year here in the south, embroiled in negotiations. He was the one who had left the travel stone in position too. There was no reason for him to be late. Davis dipped his head again, blowing gently at the smoldering twigs and not making eye contact. The forest was hushed around them, dark and looming. It was too small for an official name on any map, but what there was of it was densely packed. More than enough to fully shield them from the illuminated walls of Tol Shen, which Weir knew couldn't be more than 500 feet away. Do you think anyone on the committee will notice I've left? Weir asked idly, watching as small flames appeared in front of Tayris. Tayris snorted.
Given that we will have been gone for 2 days, I would hope so, sire.
He rolled his shoulders.
But they know as well as anyone that you need to keep your schedule quiet, and there are plenty who recognized you on the road to Darentel. So long as you're not seen here, no one will dream that you've been this far afield. And fates know they're still unaware that you have that, he added,
indicating where the teardrop-shaped black stone hung around Weir's neck, concealed though it was by his tunic.
They have no reason to be overly concerned. If anything, your absence for a couple of days will probably be a welcome relief, and we'll be back before that feeling wears off.
Weir nodded in absent acknowledgement, though he'd really only asked to fill the apprehensive hush. The committee assigned to overseeing him, a group of 12 men and women from the houses, 6 appointed by administration and 6 by the gifted, believed that they could account for all the oathstones in Andara. The one Weir had found in his father's safe, however, appeared not to exist in any official records. Weir had worked hard over the past year to keep it that way.
Do you think I made a mistake not telling them about it?
He mused, touching the chain that held the old stone in place.
I think you have made several mistakes, sire, but that was not one of them.
Weir grimaced. Tayris's words were honest, more than rebuking, but they stung nonetheless, especially as Weir still couldn't decide if he agreed. Time passed in a companionable, if anxious, silence until the cracking of twigs and rustling of bushes reached Weir's ears. A few moments later, a voice called out, low and clear.
It's Driskin Thrall, sire.
The tension in Weir's muscles eased again, and he signaled toward a clear patch of ground to his left. 2 figures emerged from the trees, their faces partially obscured in the dim light.
Driskin,
said Weir politely, as the elder stepped closer to the fire, giving Weir and Tayris each a cheerless nod before seating himself. Driskin's companion hovered at the edge of the clearing, reluctance emanating from every inch of his posture.
Come on, Dras, growled Driskin, casting an impatient glare back over the fire. You know you don't have a choice.
Dras Lothlar, former representative for Tol Shen, finally shuffled forward and joined Driskin in sitting, expression dark.
This will not end well for you, he said without preamble to Weir, eyes flashing.
He turned to Tayris.
And as for you,
be silent, Dras, said Weir calmly.
Dras's mouth opened, then snapped shut again. He looked to the side, face contorted and bright red in the firelight. Weir turned to Driskin, dismissing Dras for the time being.
Were there any problems?
Driskin shrugged, brown eyes appraising.
Not really, but we don't have much time. As I told Master Kardai, everyone on the Shen Council has been assigned people to check on them every couple of hours. If someone realizes that Dras is missing, they have his trace and a vessel to track it. This could become very messy very quickly.
We're on a tight schedule, too, Weir assured him.
The Tol Shen elder acknowledged the statement, then glanced around at the surrounding forest.
Where is Ishel?
Weir shifted uncomfortably, but it was Tayris who spoke up.
She tried, he said gently, but it was too much. She barely lasted half a day on the road.
Driskin's jaw tightened, and he studied Weir's and Tayris's expressions.
That's why this was delayed until night. You saw her back to the toll?
When Tayris nodded, Driskin exhaled.
Thank you for that.
He stuck out a hand toward Tayris.
Driskin, by the way. Tayris, said the scarred man, not moving to shake it.
Driskin left his hand extended.
You're upset about Davian, but I only told him the truth. You were keeping things from him. For good reason. You set him against me, and you did it for petty political reasons. I am obviously past that now.
Driskin held Tayris's gaze, arm still outstretched.
as I hope my presence here and the fact that I am no longer on Shen's council proves, it was a mistake."
There was a moment of silence until Tayrus finally clasped the other man's hand, much to Weir's relief. Tayrus had been grumbling about their working with the Shen Elder since Driskin's name had first been mentioned. When Driskin had first met Davian, he had gone out of his way to sow distrust. And it had worked. Davian had barely spoken to Tayrus since. It didn't help that when the boundary had been restored, just over a year ago, Tayrus's mental link to Davian had been severed. Though they all had faith that he was still alive, Alchesh's visions foresaw Davian stopping our kind of aid, after all. Worry for his well-being had been wearing on them all. Weir shifted, gesturing to Drass. "Did he give you any trouble?"
"Quite the opposite. Aside from the constant muttering, he was helpful every step of the way."
Driskin's gaze traveled involuntarily to the chain around Weir's neck.
"What did you tell him to do?"
"Whatever you said, and nothing to jeopardize what you were trying to achieve." Driskin nodded thoughtfully.
"Clever. Though next time, if you could add for him not to open his mouth at all, that would be wonderful."
He ignored Drass's poisonous glare.
"What about me?
I didn't tell you to do anything." When Driskin gave him a dubious look, Weir sighed. "I meant what I said in the message, assuming that Layman gave it to you properly. I only bound you to secrecy with your permission, and I won't do anything else unless you agree to it. I cannot expect people to trust me if I will not trust them in return."
Driskin stared at him, then flicked a questioning glance at Tayrus. "He's absent-minded on the small things sometimes, but it's the truth. For what it's worth," Tayrus added, a touch dryly.
Driskin's lips curled upward at that, though Weir had to hide a flash of irritation. Tayrus liked to prod at him like this occasionally, probably just to see whether he still could. It was fine, and better than with most of the gifted and administrators, who could barely even look him in the eye. Still, it was a stark reminder that no one with the mark truly felt comfortable around him anymore.
"It's worth enough," said Driskin eventually, "knowing that you're friends with Davian. Fates, I'm even tempted to believe you mean what you say."
He stretched, glancing sideways at Drass, who had been glaring silently into the fire during the entire conversation.
"Shall we begin?"
"Master Kardai is coming too," said Weir. "I wanted someone without a mark here."
Driskin glanced back toward the walls of Tol Shen.
"Wise, but if he is not here soon, we will have to begin without him. We have an hour, two at the most, before someone notices Drass is missing."
Weir grunted in agreement, the beginnings of a knot of worry tightening his chest. Even disregarding Driskin's concerns, he absolutely couldn't afford to let the portal back close again without going through. It was a 3-week trip from here to Elinilon, and even if he somehow made the entire journey unrecognized, an absence of that length would raise far too many questions. All of which Layman knew. He should have been here by now. Driskin picked up a stick and poked absently at the fire.
"I take it that the final augur still hasn't surfaced?"
Tayrus shook his head.
"Not even a whisper of another one," he admitted.
"You're certain?" "Yes."
The former Signari's tone was confident.
"There are always 13 with the potential to manipulate Khan at any one time, though any who have been born in the past 10 years won't have the ability yet."
He began ticking off fingers.
"Ishel, Davian, that fate's cursed scum Rowan, the two who helped bring him down, Aaron and Fesserisha, the friend of theirs who was killed in Elinilon, Kol, and the man who killed him, Sinar. The girl that mob killed in Varadin almost a year ago, plus the 4 that Duke Andras apparently found and dealt with."
He flicked a vaguely apologetic glance at Weir.
"That leaves 1 still unaccounted for."
Weir pushed down the complex, disquieting mix of emotions that surfaced whenever his father was mentioned.
We'll keep looking, he assured Driskin.
Driskin stretched, nodding.
So, how is everything else in the capital since the withdrawal?
He shrugged at Weir's raised eyebrow.
I was able to spend a grand total of 30 seconds with Master Kardai before we had to stop talking for fear of being noticed. Don't forget that those of us in Tol Shen need special dispensation just to go outside the walls these days. And I'm not exactly popular with the Council. I've heard plenty about Eleni Lom this past year, but none of it is what I would consider reliable.
Weir exchanged a look with Tayrus, who shrugged.
Life went on after it all happened, Tayrus said, turning back to Driskin. It was a mess at the beginning, of course. Even after the emergency vote kept Prince Torun in his position, nobody expected Shen to follow through and formally withdraw from the assembly. And then when they took that fates-cursed group of southern houses with them...
Driskin snorted.
I imagine that didn't sit well.
It did not, agreed Weir, picking up the thread. Aside from the embarrassment of the public spectacle, the taxes those houses were almost due to pay for their seats in the assembly, troops and supplies in particular, were badly needed in the north. Some places still hadn't recovered from the blind when the Banes came, and they were desperate for aid. But of course all the southern houses could see was that they were paying to solve other people's problems. Driskin looked unsurprised at that.
How close did it come to violence? It was a near thing, admitted Tayrus, which Weir confirmed with a bleak nod. The legal justification wasn't there, though. Participation in the assembly has always been voluntary, with houses usually considering the extra taxes a small price to pay for the power and prestige that come along with them.
Not to mention that the North started the split years ago along exactly the same lines, added Weir darkly. The South has always had to contend with both Nesk and Desriel, and the North took advantage of that, pressed back on taxes, maneuvered for more power in exchange for their aid, for far too long. The Southern houses were practically begging for a chance to retaliate.
So now everyone is just trying to figure out what Tol Shen offered them that was enticing enough for them to actually go through with the withdrawal. And what in Bates it means they're planning, finished Tayrus.
Driskin winced.
You know as much as I do about that, he said apologetically. Within the toll, the Shen Council still insist that they recognize the authority of the Assembly, that they'll happily rejoin should Eleni Lom provide what they consider an acceptable working environment.
His tone indicated cynicism. He glanced at Drass.
I think we all know at least one reason behind the split, though.
Weir just nodded, though as always the discussion of these events left him feeling queasy. After the chaos and blood of the boundary almost collapsing, he and Caroline had fought and sneaked their way back toward the capital along roads that held Banes more often than other people. Only the relatively early, near-miraculous appearance of Aaron and Deschelle, who had tracked them for days after the attack, had allowed them to make it the entire way safely. Even with the Augur's help, it had taken almost 6 weeks to return. The distinctive sight of Ilin Tora in the distance had never felt so welcoming. Then they had entered the city. Everyone from Tol Shen had already departed by the time they arrived. Nobody knew how the Gifted had found out about Weir's ability to command anyone who bore the mark, but it had been announced as fact weeks prior. The political response, perhaps predictably, had been a mixture of hysteria and opportunism for months after. Driskin watched Weir with a thoughtful frown.
What about administration?
Still functioning?
Weir rubbed his face, not wanting to have to think about it.
I suspect we can thank your people for that, actually. The Shen Council drew a line, and they put both myself and the administrators on the other side. Administration didn't have enough political capital to break off in a third direction, so it was either stay in the Assembly and implicitly back me, or become completely irrelevant as an organization.
You don't sound particularly enthused.
I'm not.
Weir saw no reason to hide the truth. We've lost a good number of our people, and more leave every week, though at least the deadline to resign passes soon. Most are defecting to Disriel, apparently, despite the Gilshar knowing what I could potentially do with them.
And you just let them go?
Asked Driskin in surprise. I had to give them the choice. Say what you will about their motivations, the administration they chose to join to looks very different from the one it is today.
Weir kept his tone dispassionate. He'd had to go through this explanation many times before.
I can't ignore my ability now that it's public knowledge, so those who stay must in some way be subject to it, and those who resign are allowed to do so only after I've bound them to secrecy. The Gilshar will not benefit from these defections. But I refuse to turn people into puppets. Anyone who stays gets my pledge that I'll only use this ability when necessary, never against administration's directives, and only with the approval of an oversight committee.
Even so, I'm impressed you've convinced anyone to stay, murmured Driskin.
The vast majority still despise me. Fear me, even, Weir conceded bluntly. They just believe in administration's purpose more, especially with the Shin gifted striking out on their own as they did. Near half of the remaining administrators live in pride these days. They're doing what they believe is necessary for the good of the country, more than following me.
Driskin grunted.
Yes, the Council have made us well aware of just how many administrators are in the area.
He turned to Tayris.
What about Tolassian? I cannot imagine that they were enthusiastic about any of this either.
Tayris shifted, the dark shape of the forest undulating behind him as a breeze caressed the trees.
There was some panic talk of trying to destroy the vessel responsible for the tenets, assuming that that would stop Prince Torren's ability, but leveler heads prevailed.
He shrugged at Driskin's look.
They're not happy, obviously, but when have they ever been? Prince Torren has given them the same options and the same guarantees as he has given administration. It is simply the reality we live in now.
Driskin sighed.
Yes, well, of course the Shen Council have their own version of what would happen if everyone believes those guarantees.
He glanced at Weir.
They're telling anyone who will listen that if we leave the jurisdictional protections of the Toll, there is nothing to stop you, and therefore administration, from legally controlling us. They've all but promised that your plan, in fact. Most people are afraid to go outside, even to patrol. It's not unlike how it felt 20 years ago in there,
he concluded grimly. Weir's heart sank at the news, though he'd had similar reports from laymen. In fact, it was a large part of why he was here. The law was clear that while inside Tol Shen, Drass, like any gifted, answered only to the Shen Council, and the Council had made a formal public declaration that Drass Lothlar did not wish to leave the Toll, ensuring that Weir could not force him to do so without it being painfully obvious that he had acted illegally. Even with Drass suspected of treason, Weir couldn't have risked that. It would place him at the mercy of an assembly already more than wary of his newfound power, as well as revealing that he had his own oathstone. The committee set up to oversee his ability-related decisions would in turn look like a sham, completely destroying the fragile trust he had worked so hard to nurture.
So we can expect no resolution to this any time soon, he concluded heavily.
I had hoped, vainly perhaps, that Shen might be convinced to help fight the Banes in the north.
Is that even needed?
Driskin asked, a surprised note of concern in his voice.
The Council have been telling us that the Banes which made it across the boundary were all but eliminated. Not that I trust them, but it seems a strange thing to lie about.
Weir couldn't help but scowl at that.
There were many more than have been accounted for. Thousands more, he emphasized, not looking in Tayris's direction. They're still out there. Waiting for something.
He let his frustration seep onto his face, knowing exactly how it sounded. Driskin glanced for confirmation at Tayris, who hesitated.
I trust Prince Torren,
the older man said eventually. Weir rolled his eyes. It's fine, Tayrus, just say it. Tayrus gave him an apologetic look.
I am also mindful of how hundreds can seem like thousands in the midst of chaos and death. I'm not saying that's what happened, he prevaricated quickly, but we have had every available man scouring the countryside for a full year, and no one, has been able to find any hint of a hidden force. There have been only pockets, groups of 10 or 20 Dargathan and Elatai surviving by picking off isolated farmers and unwary travelers. Still very dangerous, of course, but mostly dealt with now.
Everyone who was there agrees with me, though, added Weir to Driskin, trying not to sound defensive, including Ishel.
Which makes four of you, pointed out Tayrus gently. You know you have my support on this, sire, but in the absence of corroborating evidence, it would be remiss of me not to at least consider the possibility that you all overestimated the numbers in the heat of the attack.
Weir felt his jaw tighten, but nodded sharply and said no more. It was a point not worth arguing again right now, and worse, he knew that Tayrus was right. No matter what Weir, Ishel, Aaron, and Caroline had seen, there were simply no places left for such a large group of Banes to hide. It was as unsettling as it was frustrating. A snapping of twigs somewhere beyond the fire made everyone hush. There was quiet, and then the skittering patter of light paws across the ground as some small creature or other scampered away. Weir felt the muscles in his shoulders relax again. Then there was a crashing through the undergrowth. Weir leaped to his feet along with the other men as Layman burst into the clearing, his eyes wide and his breath coming in ragged gasps.
"Patrol!"
he wheezed, gesturing behind him even as he began desperately kicking dirt over the flames.
"Who?"
asked Weir, swiftly moving to help. The light of the fire began to dim.
"Shin!"
"Fates!"
Weir's heart pounded. Administration would have been much easier to deal with. The travel stones didn't emit much energy, but if an alert enough gifted got close, it was possible they would detect it. He willed on Drass as the light faded further.
"You are not to make a sound or do anything to give us away. You are to do exactly as any of us tell you."
Drass's lip curled, and his eyes smoldered, but he couldn't call out. The fire finally hissed out, the clearing plunging into near darkness. The air felt immediately colder, the crisp bite of the unusually chilly late spring night returning. Only the moonlight filtering through the boughs of the surrounding trees provided any illumination. Muffled shouts penetrated the dense surrounding brush as Weir held his breath, trying to determine the direction from which they were coming.
"Smoke!"
he heard one of the voices exclaim.
"This way!"
Weir grabbed Drass's arm, cautiously moving away from the sound and toward where the portal was hidden, settling down on his stomach about 20 feet away from the clearing where the brush was thickest. The moisture beating on the grass seeped through his tunic, and thin, thorny boughs from the bushes prodded at the still-sensitive scar beneath his ribs, but he ignored the sensations. The others were lying beside him moments later, flat to the ground, well concealed by the undergrowth. Layman's labored gasps quickly slowed to a soft pant as he recovered his breath. The clumsy crashing of someone fighting their way through the low branches grew closer, and soon bobbing spears of essence showed through the trees. Weir schooled himself to stillness, watching intently as Layman's red-cloaked pursuers, two men and two women, stumbled into the clearing, their breath misting in front of them in the sharp essence light. One of them, a portly blonde man, spied the disturbed earth and hurried over to it, hovering his hand just above where the fire had burned a minute earlier. Weir's heart dropped.
"Someone was here. It's still warm."
There was silence as the members of the patrol gazed around, and Weir felt his breath catch as their eyes swept over where he and the others were lying. But the shadows were deep and the foliage thick, and the patrol gave no sign that they saw anything untoward.
"We need to send the signal," said one of the women, her voice taut with worry. "It's too close to the wall. If he was meeting with administration..."
"Agreed,"
said the blonde man, and the others indicated their assent. The woman who had spoken raised an arm.
"Stop."
Weir murmured the word, his focus on the woman. This was dangerous. If there were any members of the patrol he couldn't see, someone bringing up the rear, or who had cut off in a different direction to search, then the potential for exposure was high. He couldn't bind people who he couldn't see and hadn't met. The woman frowned, her arm still raised. Nothing happened.
"What are you waiting for?"
asked one of the men, puzzled. Weir expanded his focus to include all four gifted.
"You will not signal Tol Shen tonight,"
he thought furiously, trying to cover all the variables.
"You will forget that you found a campfire. You will doubt any evidence you saw or heard during the chase and conclude that the man you were following turned back and fled along the road away from the toll. You will feel convinced that there is no reason to concern the council with any of this, and will also convince anyone else of the same if need be."
He said it all in a whisper, eyes never leaving the group.
"Now return to your patrol."
There was a frozen moment, and then the woman's arm lowered. She rubbed her eyes as if waking from sleep.
"Fates, what a waste of effort," muttered one of the men.
"Jumping at shadows," another agreed.
"Come on."
As one, the four left the clearing and began making their way back to the road. Weir released the breath he'd been holding, closing his eyes and going over what he had bound the gifted to before nodding to himself. It wasn't perfect, but should be good enough. He opened his eyes again, levering himself into a crouch and brushing loose twigs and grass from his clothing. He turned to the others. Driskin and Drass were staring at him, wide-eyed. Even in the deep shadows, Weir could see that the blood had drained from Driskin's face. The Shen gifted rose from his hiding spot, his gaze never leaving Weir.
"Fates," he murmured, finally finding his voice. "It's really that easy. A few words and you can tell them what to think, what to remember, how to feel?"
There was a nervous edge to his tone that bordered on panic.
"Easy, Driskin," said Tayrus, walking over and helping the man to his feet.
He gripped him by the shoulder, a sympathetic gesture.
"You knew this. It's just hard to see it in full flight the first time."
"You mean terrifying?"
asked Driskin with an awkward chuckle that was clearly an effort to avoid offending Weir.
"I mean terrifying," Tayrus held Driskin's gaze. "Which is why Torin wanted to wait for Layman. It's why he's so serious about not using this ability whenever he feels like it. He could just take our loyalty, Driskin, but he hasn't."
He glanced over at Weir.
"Trust isn't just a word here. And if we have to give our trust to anyone, we should be glad it's him. Believe me."
"You are a fool if you believe that," muttered Drass, who had scrambled to his feet. "He is dangerous."
"Be quiet, Drass," said Driskin tiredly in a dismissive, almost automatic response.
He exhaled, acknowledging Tayrus's words.
"You're right. Sorry," he added as an aside to Weir. "It just took me by surprise."
"No apology necessary," Weir assured him as they started heading back to the clearing.
As far as reactions from the gifted or administrators went, this was among the most mild he'd seen.
"Quick thinking, by the way,"
added Layman to Weir, giving him an approving clap on the back.
"There could well have been more than the four of them. I only heard the shouts behind me just after I left the road. I thought I'd taken appropriate measures, but they must have been following me for quite a while, keeping their distance until I did something suspicious."
He squinted through the trees in the direction in which the patrol had disappeared.
"I don't believe they'll be back, but we should probably make do without a fire now."
Weir screwed up his face. The chill of the night was made even worse by his now damp clothes, but nodded in agreement along with the others. Better discomfort, severe though it was going to be, than being caught. Soon enough, they had settled down, cloaks pulled tight against the sharp air. Weir took a deep breath, then turned to the former representative, whose expression suggested he knew exactly what was coming.
"Now, Drass," said Weir quietly.
It's finally time for you to talk.
Chapter 2 Drass shifted, the fear that had hovered at the edge of his features since his arrival finally creeping into his eyes.
"You are making a mistake, Prince Torin," he said quickly. "Whatever he's told you about what will happen from here, you cannot trust Tayris. The Assembly won't be able to ignore—"
"You may talk to answer questions," Weir corrected himself in a growl. He shook his head. "I have given you and Tol Shen plenty of opportunities to come forward of your own free will. I have tried every diplomatic channel for a year, Drass. So now you are here to provide information. You will do that, and you will do so fully and truthfully, ensuring that you do not omit or gloss over anything that you think I may be even vaguely interested in knowing. Do you understand?"
"I understand," said Drass,
the words sounding as though they were torn from his lips. "Good." Weir leaned forward, staring across at the moonlight-framed man, who had folded in on himself and looked considerably shorter as a result.
"First question. Were you responsible, or do you know who was responsible for my uncle's illness and behavior when the blind attacked Ilin Ilan?"
Drass's lip curled, and Weir could see him trying to stop the answer from escaping.
"Yes. I was responsible. My proximity to King Andrus allowed me to use vessels called Searings, but we only had three of them."
He flexed his fingers nervously.
"It was meant to be control, with no sign of illness. We thought not having the full set of five might result in weaker, less perfect control, which it did, but we didn't anticipate the side effects."
Weir felt a chill at the reluctantly delivered words, and he heard Tayris exhale sharply beside him. They had long suspected Drass, enough to believe that his involvement in King Andrus's illness had been a major factor behind, possibly even the catalyst for, Tol Shen's decision to withdraw from the capital. It made sense. The drastic measure had not only allowed Shen to publicly take the moral high ground against Weir, but also led to the continued safety of one of their most politically damaging secrets. It was why Weir was here, why he had decided that taking this risk was justified. Still, having it all confirmed was as sickening as it was a relief.
Weir pressed. "The Shen Council. Elder Dane authorized it. But I believe many in the Shen Council knew of the plan."
Weir felt his jaw tighten.
"Many or all?"
"Not all. Some, like Driskin over there, would have caused trouble. They were omitted."
Weir glanced across at the others, gauging their reactions. Tayris and Layman looked furious but unsurprised. Across from them, Driskin's expression was impassive, but Weir noticed that his fists were clenched so hard that the knuckles had turned white. Driskin had agreed to help Weir because he'd wanted to know the truth, but he had to have been hoping that the Shen Council, the people with whom he had worked his entire life, were not outright traitors. Before Weir could speak again, Layman leaned forward, eyes bright in the cold moonlight.
"Do you have the missing pages from the journal?"
Drass just looked at him stonily. Weir sighed.
"You will answer the others' questions as completely and honestly as if they were my own."
Drass scowled.
"Yes,"
he breathed, a puff of silvery steam drifting from his mouth.
"We have the pages. They're how we knew that the blind would be repelled with the gifted's help. We wanted to make sure that our contribution was properly appreciated, and that the king and the assembly could claim no credit for what we did."
"Where are the pages?
How did the Shen get them?
What else is in them?
How did you know you could trust them?"
Tayris and Layman spoke over the top of each other in their eagerness. Before Drass could open his mouth, Weir waved them back to silence.
"Let's allow him to answer."
To the side, Driskin continued to watch, his shattered expression growing grimmer with each passing second. He'd known that there was an old vision of the blind attacking Ilin Ilan, the entire Shen Council had, in fact. But he'd believed it to be a copy, transcribed from memory and not necessarily reliable. He had also assured Weir, via Layman, that there was no possibility Tol Shen had the famously missing section of the Augur's journal. Drass's face was set into a permanent glare now.
"The pages are locked away in Tol Shen, in our vault. Do you remember Diriana Treleth?
The scribe from before the war, said Layman.
Yes. Drass licked his lips. A few months before it all began, she became involved with Lyris Dane, romantically. He was told things.
Weir just frowned, but the reaction of the other three men was far more incredulous.
The scribe fed him information? That's preposterous, sputtered Tayrus,
louder than he should have, looking as if he'd just been insulted.
Would never have happened, Driskin agreed vehemently. That was a sacred position. The augurs read everyone they chose for it. If someone had even hinted that they could betray the visions, then they would never have been allowed the job.
Across from him, Layman nodded along emphatically.
You are fools if you think the system was perfect, sneered Drass. I'm sure that when Diriana started, her intent was not to do anything untoward. But you all remember how quickly things changed?
His glower deepened, clearly still trying to prevent himself from talking.
Besides, as far as passing along the information went, she had permission.
Both Layman and Tayrus shifted, and Weir found his stomach suddenly unsettled at their expressions. Driskin had seen the same thing. His eyes became sharp, appraising as he watched.
Permission?
Asked Tayrus. Dread threaded through his voice. Drass hesitated again, but Weir's binding pulled him onward.
One of the augurs knew about the rebellion before it happened.
Who?
Asked Layman heavily.
Jacaris.
Drass's eyebrows rose as he saw the two men's expressions.
You don't look surprised.
Tell us exactly what Jacaris did.
Terrace's voice was hard. Drass shifted, looking irritated at not getting a response, and even more so at being unable to pursue the matter.
He knew about Diriana's relationship with Lyris. The augurs were already having trouble with their visions by that point, so of course Diriana knew better than anyone that there was a real problem. Jacaris came to her and told her that there was going to be a rebellion, and that nothing anyone did could stop it. He said he knew which of the visions she'd be receiving were trustworthy.
Layman sucked air through his front teeth.
So you knew that he was a traitor?
Drass's eyes darted nervously, as if he were still looking for a way to escape.
Yes. At least we speculated that he must have been in on it somehow. There's no other way to explain why one augur over all the others would know which visions were true and which were not.
Weir gazed at the former representative, his distaste mirrored in Tayrus and Layman's expressions. It fit. Fit with what he knew, fit with what his father had written about Jacaris. Still, the three of them had learned the depths of that betrayal only a year ago. Drass had carried the knowledge of it for more than 20. Driskin's face had drained of blood, but somehow he looked even more dazed as he read the other's expressions and realized that he had been the only one not to know.
Why would he tell Diriana the truth, then? Or get Lyris involved in the first place,
the Shen Gifted eventually whispered, his voice trembling. He did nothing to conceal his shock, and Weir couldn't blame him. The augur's failure, their fall, had been the great mystery of his generation. To discover that it had come about because of treachery within their own ranks would have been a confusing, painful revelation for any gifted, let alone a former Signari.
Jacaris wanted something from the Toll's vault, and he wanted it kept secret, explained Drass to Driskin, the words tumbling out of him. But back then it was Tarev leading Toll Shen, and you remember what he was like? Not a man to break protocol. He would have died before going into that vault without permission from the other augurs, too.
Driskin stared at Drass wide-eyed, but in the end reluctantly acknowledged the statement. Weir watched intently, frowning. Davian had told him about the vault at Toll Shen, about how it had been designed to prevent even augurs from unauthorized access.
Jacaris already knew that Toll Shen would survive the war, continued Drass, so he equipped Lyris, made sure that he would be the one credited with its defense.
Which led us to choosing him to lead the council when Tarev died.
Driskin's eyes were hard.
Was Tarev's death really an accident?
No.
Driskin's jaw clenched.
And you were party to it?
"That's why you were chosen to be representative?" he asked, voice suddenly dangerously taut.
"Yes."
There was a shocked second of stillness, and then Driskin abruptly surged at Drass with a snarl of rage, Drass falling over backward in fearful surprise as he tried to scramble away. Terris and Layman both moved swiftly to restrain Driskin, but not before the former Signari had managed to land a savage kick to Drass's face. A cry of pain shattered the still night.
"Enough!"
Weir snapped out the word, though he kept his voice low, not wanting the sound to penetrate too far through the surrounding brush. The three gifted immediately stopped, reluctantly resuming their seats, Driskin's glare still murderous and Drass moving dazedly as blood leaked from an evidently broken nose. Layman stood motionless, blinking in surprise before shooting Weir a cautious nod and copying them. Weir waited until the furious breathing of the men had calmed, then shook his head angrily.
"We have already established that he is a disgusting excuse for a man," he said, addressing Driskin more than the other two, "and that he has much to answer for."
He peered at Drass's face.
"You will need to heal him before you return."
Driskin's lip curled.
"I'll do it on the way back."
"Fair enough.
Just see that you do."
Driskin clenched and unclenched his hands, plainly still bringing his emotions back under control.
"I apologize. I didn't expect that. Tarav was a good man, a great leader, one of the last Signari, and my friend."
He turned to Drass, eyes flat and cold.
"What did Jacarus want from the vault?"
"An amulet."
Drass's voice was nasal now. He had tilted his head back, pinching his nose with one hand while trying to gently staunch the leaking fluid with the corner of his cloak.
"Lyris agreed to go through with the plan, but once the other augurs died, and knowing what he knew from Diriana, he realized that there was a chance for Shen to lead all of Ondara, without any augur influence whatsoever. He guessed that Jacarus couldn't have seen his betrayal, given that Jacarus had chosen him in the first place. So rather than handing over the amulet, Lyris ambushed and killed him."
There was silence.
"The vessel Davian took from the vault,"
Weir said suddenly to the other three, looking in particular at Driskin. Driskin nodded slowly.
"It could be. There is more than one amulet down there, though."
Despite the words, his voice held a note of concern. Drass froze, still holding his nose, looking as though he had just put the pieces together.
"The vessel that could stop an augur from using their powers? It's the same one," he said. "I heard it was stolen before I got back, when that augur who caused all the problems last year was killed, but..."
He trailed off.
"Fates,"
Terris cursed.
"That cannot be coincidence." "Do you know who did the killing? Who took it?"
asked Layman quietly, as Weir felt a sudden surge of disquiet. He wanted to hear what the two men from Tol Shen had to say, but he already knew the answer. Drass and Driskin both shook their heads.
"We assumed that it was one of our people. Rowan had certainly done enough to motivate them," admitted Driskin.
"The council had been considering how he might have been useful, but nobody wept any tears over his death. There was no real investigation,"
agreed Drass. There was only the whispering of the frigid night breeze for a few seconds.
"Jacarus killed Rowan and took it," Weir said, feeling sick.
The other men all stared at him, evidently hearing the certainty in his tone.
"Aaron told me. I'd almost forgotten. It didn't seem important at the time, given that we were fleeing for our lives. But he mentioned that Jacarus had the amulet when he and Asha met with him, just before Asha restored the boundary."
"What in the fates are you talking about? Jacarus is dead,"
snapped Drass irritably.
"Your augur friend was mistaken."
Driskin studied Weir intently.
"Davian would have known Jacarus as a man called Sinar."
Weir's chest ached a little at the reminder of his missing friend, but he dipped his head. Driskin's shoulders slumped.
"Fates. Rowan claimed that a pre-war augur sent him to the toll," he said.
A shadow. Davian said it had to have been Siner. I didn't recognize the name or description, but...
Drass gaped at Driskin, and the other three considered the words in horror.
So he set it up. The whole thing, said Layman eventually. If Lyrus really did try to betray Jacaris, then this sequence of events, Tol Shen being taken over by Rowan, Lyrus's death, the amulet being free of the vault, cannot be coincidence.
20 years is a long time to wait for revenge, observed Tayrus.
Not if he knew it would happen, and get him the amulet, too.
True. Depending on why it is so important in the first place,
Tayrus rubbed his chin, gazing at Drass.
What do you know of the vessel? Its origin, its purpose?
Only that it was capable of disabling an augur.
Drass sneered at Tayrus's penetrating look.
That is all.
Tayrus's lip curled, and he opened his mouth to respond, but Layman laid a hand on the Athian representative's arm.
Mystery for another day, my friend. Our time here is running short. Let us get the answers we can and worry about the rest later.
When Tayrus gave a curt nod of assent, Layman turned to Drass.
How many people had knowledge of this?
Only a few. I am the last left alive, as far as I know. The rest of the council members who were involved knew to trust Lyrus's judgment on the visions, and most of them realized that he must have figured out a way to tell which ones were reliable. But none of them were aware that he'd made the deal with Jacaris, or that he had known the war was coming before it began.
What about the scribe? Asked Weir.
She is dead, confirmed Tayrus grimly before Drass could reply. The night of the rebellion, I saw her body.
Lyrus probably saw that coming too, muttered Driskin bitterly.
Focus, gentlemen, murmured Layman. We have minutes, not hours. He glanced up through the trees toward where they all knew the essence-lit walls of the toll lay, then back to Drass. Why tear out the pages? Why not take the entire book or copy them?
According to Lyrus, there wasn't time. He was there in the palace that night. He knew that if the journal was missing, the rebellion would hunt to the ends of the earth for it. Even with the augur's failure to see what was coming, it was still a prize for Varden Shell and his men. Pages missing would be suspicious, but in the chaos, and with the augurs and Diriana dead, Lyrus guessed that there would be no reason for them to devote an inordinate amount of resources to figuring out why. He was right, too.
Makes sense, admitted Tayrus reluctantly.
The questioning continued for a while after that, somewhat haphazardly due to the need for haste. As soon as something occurred to Tayrus, Layman, or occasionally Driskin, they would immediately set about trying to pry details from Drass's unwilling lips. Sometimes the focus was on events during the war, sometimes it was information about things currently happening within Tol Shen's council. Weir, for his part, mostly listened with mute unease. The others knew Tol Shen better than he, and he had to trust them to ask the right questions. Gradually, a clear picture began to form. 20 years ago, the Shen Gifted, under the new leadership of Lyrus Dane, had waited out the rebellion behind their walls and begun planning to take control of the new generation of augurs. Then, using information from the visions Jacaris had told him were reliable, Elder Dane had started forging political alliances with an unusual series of houses, many of them insignificant at the time, distant from the capital, the benefits of the relationships unapparent until years later. Eventually, knowing the Blind's invasion would be defeated, Lyrus had instructed Drass to control the king when it finally came, ensuring that the Gifted would get the lion's share of the credit for the victory. And then, even after the augur amnesty was passed, Lyrus had felt no need to send the augurs north. Thanks again to the visions, he had been confident that the boundary would be made strong again regardless. Every move had been cold, calculated, often accumulating power at great cost to others, but never with any obvious correlation, never with any way to lay blame. Weir would have admired the brilliance and daring of it all, if it hadn't disgusted him to his core. It wasn't until their time was almost over, though, Driskin casting constant nervous glances in the direction of the toll, that the worst of the revelations came.
"Something still doesn't feel quite right."
It was Layman speaking up, looking thoughtful.
"Lyra's focused heavily on his relationships with the southern houses. That makes sense to an extent. The north was hit hard by the Blind's invasion, which placed a lot more importance on the south's resources and massively increased their influence." He frowned. "That should have been exacerbated by the presence of the Banes, but instead, Shen encouraged those southern houses to withdraw from the assembly. If it's control of Andara that they want, the smarter move would have been to leverage the North's need, not slap those who live there in the face."
He turned and looked questioningly at Drass. When the other man just stared impudently back, Layman rolled his eyes.
"Drass, why and how did you convince the southern houses to withdraw along with Shen? What advantage did you all see in it?"
Drass's breathing became short and a vein on his neck started to bulge. Weir leaned forward, suddenly intent. If Drass had been reluctant before, he was all but bursting from the effort of remaining silent now.
"Ilin Ilan will be destroyed,"
he finally growled, lips drawn back in a snarl of frustration.
"Possibly soon."
There was utter, disbelieving silence as Weir and the others stared at Drass. The moonlight temporarily faded as a cloud passed overhead.
"What?"
Tayrus and Driskin both spoke at the same time, and Weir's heartbeat was suddenly loud in his own ears. The moon emerged again, coating everything in stark silvers and blacks. Next to Weir, Layman was leaning slightly away from Drass, as if the man's words were poison.
"The last set of visions in the journal show Ilin Ilan in ruins. Abandoned. Irreparable without years of work. Structures melted to the ground. The builder's creations destroyed."
Drass kept his gaze on the ground as he spoke.
"Other correlating visions show that the South survives. One in particular suggests that it all happens close to the Festival of Ravens, which is why we got the houses to leave before the festival last year. We don't know the exact year it will happen, but as Prythe is Andara's second largest city, and easily its most important in the south, we made the assumption, and the council continues to believe, that the capital will shift to there, at least temporarily after it does."
Another heavy, shocked silence greeted the words.
"And if Ilin Ilan falls, the north is presumably either lost or suffers greatly."
It was Layman, the first of them to recover enough to speak. Even so, his voice had an uncharacteristic quaver to it.
"Withdrawing from the assembly leaves the southern houses with no obligation to provide manpower, supplies, other resources. If they're not part of the government, then they are simply wealthy families with vast holdings. King Andras would have no legal way to compel them to contribute to a defense, and be in no position to enforce such demands even if he tried."
"Yes."
Drass's confirmation held no emotion.
"This way we get to form a government with allies who still have much to offer. The surviving part of the country will stay strong."
The words ignited a dark fury in Weir.
"And everyone in the north is, what, unimportant?"
"To an extent,"
conceded Drass. Weir gaped at him, not knowing how to respond. This year's festival was only 2 weeks away. Though Layman, Tayrus, and Driskin immediately began firing related questions, Drass knew little more than he'd already said. Ilin Ilan would be completely scorched, leveled by fire, but there was no indication of how or why it would happen. After a few minutes, Driskin shifted, eyes glinting as he glanced up at the position of the moon and then in the direction of Tol Shen.
"We are out of time. In fact, we should already have started heading back. Someone will be checking on him very soon."
Weir gave a short nod. He wanted nothing more than to keep Drass here, or better yet, to force him to return to Ilin Ilan and admit to all he had done. But Tol Shen would just drown out the truth with claims of a forced, false confession.
For now, the information they had gained would have to be enough. He stretched cramped, cold muscles as he rose from his seat, the others following his example. The surrounding forest was blessedly silent except for the occasional rustle of leaves in the breeze.
"How did Tol Shen find out about my ability to bind people?" Weir asked Drass suddenly.
It was by far the least of their concerns right now, but it had been vexing him. This would be his last chance to find out for a while.
"Hrethgar told us," said Drass. "It's why we tried to have you assassinated during your dinner at the Tel'rath estate."
Everyone froze, and Weir heard Driskin muttering a disbelieving curse under his breath.
"You were behind that?"
Weir asked, though his tone was more weary than angry now. Any other time, the information would have shocked him. On the heels of learning about the destruction of Ilin Ilan, it seemed like little more than a footnote. Then he cocked his head to the side, registering the timing.
"Wait, you knew about my ability before I did? How?"
"Hrethgar told us," repeated Drass.
The name meant nothing to Weir, but Layman and Tayrus both wore utterly stunned, horrified expressions.
"Hrethgar tell An," clarified Layman, his voice hollow.
"Yes."
"Sire, we really need to go," said Driskin, apologetic urgency in his voice. "You need to bind Drass now."
"Just wait," Weir glared at Drass. "Who is this Hrethgar? How did he find out, then?"
"He was one of the Signari and a council member for Tol Athian," interjected Driskin quickly before Drass could respond, tightness increasingly threaded through his tone. "Tayrus can probably tell you more about who he was. I'd assumed he'd died in the war. I have no idea how he's been communicating with anyone in Shen. I've been kept in the dark about far too many things, apparently."
He sounded nauseous.
"I'll find out what I can from Drass on the way back, but we truly have to go. Now."
"He passed on information mostly through Lyris," added Drass. "I haven't heard from him since Lyris's death. I don't know how he knew about you. Lyris knew even before the blind attacked, but he didn't want to take action until you'd changed the tenets."
Weir groaned in frustration. There were so many more answers he wanted from Drass, and simply not enough time to get them all from him.
"How in the fates did you convince former administrators to—"
"Sire!"
Weir gritted his teeth, but he knew the mounting panic in Driskin's voice wasn't without reason. The portal back to Darin Tell would be running out of essence soon, too.
"Drass, you will return with Driskin and do everything you can to avoid being discovered. You'll tell him everything you know about Hrethgar on the way back. Once you're in your bed, you will fall asleep and completely forget everything that has happened this evening, believing yourself to have slept the entire night through."
Driskin gave a sharp, relieved nod.
"I'll send word when I can."
He grabbed Drass roughly by the arm and dragged him away into the darkness. As the sounds of Driskin and Drass making their way through the undergrowth faded beneath the breeze, Weir exhaled, turning to his other companions. The two men were still silent, but it took only a glance to know that something was badly amiss.
"You know who this Hrethgar is?" he asked.
Tayrus opened his mouth as if to reply, then shut it again and glanced at Layman, who nodded slowly.
"We do. We killed him more than 20 years ago. An accident,"
the king's advisor explained softly.
"It was our first attempt at a Sharteth."
Chapter 3 Davian strolled the quiet streets of Kaladel, his step light, enjoying the crisp warmth of the early morning sun as it competed with a fresh breeze sweeping in off the harbor. Mistress Alita had woken him before dawn to fetch supplies from town, but he found himself not minding today. The walk here along the clifftop, with the sun barely peeking over the horizon, had been especially peaceful as he'd watched Kaladel's fleet of fishing boats far below slide out into the Vashian Ocean for their day's work. Even now, in the town itself, the rhythmic lapping of waves was still audible over the idle chatter of merchants setting up in the next street. The harborside village felt sleepy rather than its usual bustling self. He liked it. He paused, getting his bearings,
then ducked down an alley and into a side street. If he was quick enough in completing his chores today, there might even be time to swim before returning to the school. Footsteps echoed abruptly behind him, and before he thought to turn, a meaty hand was roughly grasping his arm. Davian flinched, instinctively trying to shrug off the iron grip. He twisted to see a large man with blonde hair and weather-beaten skin looming over him, expression sour. Two more men stood off to the side, their eyes cold as they watched.
"What are you doing?"
asked Davian indignantly, trying again to squirm out of the big man's grasp. Had these men mistaken him for someone else? The street was empty behind them, he realized to his sudden concern.
"He's just a child, Tanner," said the one with a strong jaw and muscular physique, looking bored.
They were all fishermen, from the looks of them, though why they weren't out with their boats already, Davian couldn't imagine.
"Not worth it."
Tanner, the big man, ignored his companion and stared at Davian, lip curled.
"You working for the bleeders, boy?"
Tanner asked, his breathing oddly heavy. Davian's nose wrinkled at the sharp tang of alcohol. Mistress Alita was always muttering about men who drank early, and this was definitely early.
"Gifted," corrected Davian automatically.
He'd used that other word in Mistress Alita's presence once. It was possible that he was physically incapable of saying it any more. The polite term was the wrong thing to say here, though, clearly. Tanner's eyes flashed, and he spun, not relinquishing his grip on Davian's